it's a profit center, I think, for some providers, where they're getting squeezed in some other areas. Comp traditionally has become a way to maximize their profits.
An effort to bring down the cost of workers' comp medical bills in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, February 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the little bill that's creating a big controversy at the state capitol.
I was thinking this would be a yawner, that it would just be one of those things everyone would get behind because it's a benefit.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Electronic health records free Alaskans from the paper chase by giving doctors, nurses, and families secure access to medical information when and where they need it. Electronic health records increase safety and security. Electronic records take health information out of the filing cabinet and into the digital light. You can find out more at ak-ehealth.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in partnership with the Alaska eHealth Network.
Employers in Alaska pay the highest workers' compensation premiums in the country, and most of that cost goes toward medical claims. The Alaska State Chamber of Commerce has, for several years, made reforming the system one of its legislative priorities. And this year, at least one state lawmaker is working on legislation to address the issue. APRN's Any Fight reports.
When a worker gets injured on the job in the Kenai Peninsula borough, Julie Sisko's first thought is concern for the employee's health. Her second thought is concern for what it will cost.
Things have gotten so out of hand with the medical fees that things that I know 5 years ago would have cost $50,000, I know right now it's going to cost over $100,000. Being a steward of public money, that's kind of hard to justify those increases.
Sisko manages workers' compensation claims for the borough and school district. In 2009, the average workers' comp claim in the borough cost $3,500. By last year, that figure had more than quadrupled to $19,000. That's partly because employers can't negotiate with medical providers the way private insurers can. There is a cap on what doctors can charge, but Sisko says doctors tend to bill right up to that cap.
In some cases, I think it's out of line, because I know what things get paid under benefits, and then I see the bills that we pay for injured workers for similar procedures, and it's substantially more for the same procedure done in the same facility.
According to a 2011 report paid for by the Alaska Healthcare Commission, medical providers charge 50% more for workers' compensation claims than for regular health insurance in Alaska. Mike Monagle directs the state's workers' compensation division. He points out workers' comp medical costs have risen dramatically, 25% over the last 5 years, despite a significant decline in worker injuries.
It's a profit center, I think, for some providers, where they're getting squeezed in some other areas. Comp traditionally has become a way to maximize their profits.
The Alaska State Medical Association and the Anchorage Orthopedic Society didn't respond to repeated requests to comment for this story. As part of his job, Monagle chairs the state's Workers' Compensation Board. In October, the board passed a resolution calling for several reforms aimed at containing medical costs. The proposed reforms won't let employers negotiate fees, but would set a new fee schedule for providers to try to bring rates more in line with what private insurance pays. The resolution was approved unanimously by a board made up of both industry and labor representatives. Monagle says he's optimistic even doctors will eventually support reform.
Doctors are employers as well, and they have to pay these same high costs. And you start talking through possible solutions, I do think you can reach consensus on these kinds of things. It's just something in our particular state that really hasn't happened yet. We really haven't had a good consensus of stakeholders on how to fix this situation.
The legislature is starting to look into the issue. Lawmakers are considering a bill right now that will close a loophole that allowed out-of-state hospitals and providers to charge Alaska rates for their services. That made it hard for employers to save money when employees agreed to travel out of state for expensive surgeries. And Representative Kurt Olson, a Republican from Soldotna, says he's planning to introduce legislation this session that will address the broader medical cost issue. Rick Traney works for the Teamsters Union in Anchorage and is on the Workers' Compensation Board.
I believe there are some inflated prices. Is it the most pressing problem facing workers' comp? Well, I don't think so.
Traney signed the resolution calling for medical cost reform, but he hopes as lawmakers look to lower medical costs, they also consider increasing workers' comp benefits for employees. Traney says many of those benefits haven't changed in nearly 15 years.
I have not seen a single resolution or regulation put in front of the board that increases the employee's benefit.
Still, Traney says he doesn't want an employer to pay more for medical care than they have to. And employers from across the state have sent testimony to the Workers' Compensation Board asking for help bringing down medical costs. Julie Sisko from the Kenai Peninsula Borough says employers and employees have the same goal, to see injured workers get the medical care they need and return to work as quickly as possible.
Personally, I want to see the system get back to what it was meant to do, which is benefit the employees. And somehow that has shifted to where the system doesn't necessarily benefit the employee.
Who does it benefit?
It benefits the medical providers.
Sisko says workers' comp doesn't represent a huge chunk of her school district's budget. But in this time of belt tightening around the state, every dollar counts. And Sisko says any money the district could save as a result of reform would go right back into classrooms. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
A labor dispute is brewing between a regional fuel distributor and its staff in Unalaska. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, employees of Delta Western say the company doesn't want them to unionize.
Delta Western has about 16 employees in Unalaska to fill up commercial vessels and sell home heating fuel. Early Sunday morning, about half of those workers walked off the job and onto a picket line with members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union.
Delta Western unfair!
Delta Western unfair!
Delta Western unfair!
Delta Western unfair!
Woo!
Leo Dacia was a dock driver for Delta Western.
5 years plus, yeah.
He and his coworkers want to join the union, but Dacia alleges that the company has been trying to discourage them.
Yeah, we have a 401k, but they say that if they if we join the union, 401k, the company that they have, won't be dealing with us if we're union. So they're threatening to stop that.
Dacia also alleged that for months they've been harassed by their supervisor during a recent snowstorm.
He had me shoveled down at the dock where I can use an equipment, but he told me to use manual labor.
The International Longshore and Warehouse Union sent an organizer to Unalaska last week. John Breyer helped put together the walkout, and he says the union also filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board on the workers' behalf.
It's called an unfair labor practice. It's discrimination against these folks for exercising their rights to be union.
In the complaint, the union alleges that Delta Western threatened at least two pro-union workers with disciplinary action and had their work assignments changed. Breyer says that all 7 employees who walked out on Sunday morning were back at work by the end of the day. On Monday, the workers delivered a letter to Delta Western asking the company to recognize them as union members, but Breyer says the company hasn't responded to that letter yet. Delta Western's site manager in Unalaska declined to comment, and representatives from Delta Western's parent company, North Star Petroleum, weren't available on Tuesday. This isn't the first time Delta Western's employees in Unalaska have tried to unionize. In 2007, they considered joining the Teamsters, and then the International Longshore and Warehouse Union. The movement to join the ILWU went to a vote, but according to records from the National Labor Relations Board, the measure failed to get support from a majority of workers. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough will participate in a school funding lawsuit filed by the Ketchikan Gateway Borough against the state of Alaska. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the suit challenges the constitutionality of the state requiring organized municipalities to help cover the cost of local schools.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly voted unanimously Thursday night to join Ketchikan's lawsuit as an amicus or friend of the court. Borough Assembly Member Diane Hutchison says she's been talking with Ketchikan officials and thinks the suit is in Fairbanks' best interest.
I think it's probably the largest single fiscal issue before our borough on an annual basis. It basically is around $27 million that it could make a difference of how we, as a local legislative body, are able to allocate local taxpayer dollars.
The suit calls the state's required local education contribution by municipalities an illegal, unfunded mandate. Assemblymember John Davies agreed that constitutional and fairness issues need to be resolved, but cautioned that the suit could come back to bite the boroughs.
Result in less funding for education overall. And that's not good for the kids.
Davies envisioned a scenario in which increasingly tight state budgets result in reduced money for schools or siphoning of dollars from other state programs the boroughs currently benefit from.
And we'll have to find, either go without those other things or find local revenues to pay for those things that the state paid for before.
A bill in the state legislature sponsored by Representative Tammy Wilson of North Pole would eliminate the required local contribution by municipalities. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the debate over whether Alaska Native languages should join English as official state languages.
For over 10,000 years, there have been other languages here, and they are still here today.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.gov.
A bill that would save military spouses the trouble of going to the DMV has triggered an unlikely battle over gay rights in the state legislature. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
When Representative Doug Isaacson introduced the Military Spouse Residency Relief Act, he did not expect it to be controversial.
No, I was thinking this would be a yawner, that it would just be one of those things everyone would get behind because it's a benefit to military.
The bill is not complicated. Members of the military are already allowed to keep their out-of-state driver's licenses, so this legislation would extend that perk to their husbands and wives. What it wouldn't do is extend it to their domestic partners. The bill specifically uses the word spouses, so same-sex couples aren't covered by this bill because their marriages aren't legally recognized by the state. Representative Max Gruenberg, an Anchorage Democrat, has been trying to change that. He says even if the bill deals with a tiny perk, the language in it is still discriminatory.
I think it's important that we not permit this kind, even if it's a small amount, of unequal treatment to continue.
Gruenberg first offered an amendment to include same-sex partners in the bill during a hearing of the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee last week, and it failed on party lines. On Tuesday, the same amendment was offered in a different committee, and again, it failed, with one Democrat voting for it and five Republicans objecting. If the bill appears on the House floor, the Democratic minority is likely to offer up the amendment again. Both times the amendment has been offered, opponents rejected it on fairly technical grounds. The State Affairs Committee found the amendment inappropriate because adding same-sex partners to the legislation would have required a title change for the bill. The Military and Veterans Affairs Committee shuttled it because the Supreme Court is already looking at whether same-sex partners should be included under the umbrella of spouse. Gruenberg doesn't think that's how this bill should be handled. He says the legislature regularly considers policy that would affect pending litigation.
The legislature shouldn't shirk its duty to just wait for a court to decide something when really it's a moral issue that's involved, the question of equal rights.
But Isaacson still thinks the wait-and-see approach is the right one to take with this bill. Over the next few months, the Alaska Supreme Court is expected to rule on whether Anchorage can offer property tax exemptions to married couples, which would settle the spouse question.
The spouse is spouse, however defined. And if the law changes to say that spouse means partner, then this will still be a benefit to all parties concerned, and so the amendment is unnecessary to the intent of the bill.
The state of Alaska already extends benefits to the same-sex partners of its employees after a different Supreme Court decision in 2005 determined that offering them only to straight couples violated the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
A complaint was filed today with the Alaska Public Offices Commission against Anchorage Assembly candidate Mao Tosi. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Monday, Mao Tosi received a surprise visit to his office at the Northway Mall.
By late afternoon, a gentleman came by and asked for me and dropped off some paperwork.
The paperwork was a 15-count complaint against his campaign with the Alaska Public Offices Commission, or APOC. It was filed Tuesday afternoon. Tosi, a former NFL football player and activist who manages the Northway Mall and runs the nonprofit Alaska Pride Youth Programs, jumped into the race against sitting Assemblymember Adam Trombley and candidate Pete Peterson at the last minute. Tosi refutes some of the allegations. He says he's never run for public office before and that most of the violations are honest mistakes that he's working with APOC to correct as soon as possible.
There's just things that now that we are aware of, we just want to go through and make sure those don't become issues again. Being new to the campaign scene is something that I think people expected me to screw up here or there, but definitely would know that I would fix anything that's wrong in there.
Allegations in the complaint include making campaign expenditures before filing for office, not properly identifying political ads like bumper stickers were paid for by his campaign, and using his position at the Northway Mall to benefit his campaign, among other things. John E. Lewis filed the complaint and requested expedited review. APOC officials are not commenting at this time, except to say that the complaint has been accepted. There will be a hearing, but officials have not yet set a date. If the allegations prove true, Tosi could be fined. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Business and community leaders in Tok are trying to revive a plan to cut the area's high energy costs by generating electricity with biomass. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
A year ago, Tok was on track to become the first community in Alaska to generate its electricity using biomass. Officials with Alaska Power and Telephone had proposed to harvest scrappy timber like black spruce from nearby state forest land, process it, and use that biomass to generate electricity at less cost than the diesel fuel it now uses. AP&T spokesman Dave Stancliffe says the Tok area is economically distressed and desperately needs cheaper power than the 51 cents per kilowatt hour that businesses are paying now.
Our little grocery store, it's just tiny. It pays $37,000 a month in power bills.
The residential rate is 31 cents per kilowatt hour, which goes up to 51 cents after 500 kilowatt hours.
It's not unusual for a resident on a high-use winter month here in Tok to have a $500 or $600 power bill.
Stancliffe says high energy costs, combined with other factors, are plunging the area into, quote, an economic death spiral. That's what motivated AP&T a couple of years ago to propose building a biomass-fueled power plant that would initially generate 2 megawatts of electricity, enough for about 800 customers. The company asked the State Division of Forestry for a timber sales contract so they could harvest trees for power plant fuel. Forestry came up with a 25-year timber sales contract and let it out for competitive bid in April, but, says Stancliffe, AP&T officials decided against bidding on it because the contract terms made it hard for the company to get reasonable financing.
There is some language and there are some specifics within that contract that you couldn't take it to a bank or a finance institution and secure a loan.
After the contract failed to attract any bids, Forestry shelved the proposal until a few weeks ago. Stancliffe says that's when Tok business and community leaders regrouped and came up with a new plan that would enable them to attract financing. But he says they're having a hard time convincing forestry officials to agree to a contract that will help them accomplish that. Stancliffe says much of the standard boilerplate language in their contracts shouldn't apply for the Tok proposal because it's based on harvesting timber of little commercial value. He says the timber should instead be considered a hazard because it's helped fuel several huge wildfires over the past couple of decades that have cost the state some $85 million to put out.
You know, one has to wonder if this is hazardous fuel, and it is, it's been identified as such, no one questions it, why people are having to pay anything. The state should actually see it as a benefit in terms of fire mitigation, public safety.
Forestry officials say it's not that simple. Mike Curran is a senior agency official appointed to head up a biomass team to come up with ways to promote the use of the resource. Curran says they're trying to accommodate Tok's proposal and may be able to give him a break by allowing more time in waiving or reducing some bonds and deposits.
And I think there may be a few things we can modify.
Curran says forestry is not, however, able to give them all the breaks they're asking for. He says that's because the contract must comply with state law and regulations that, among other things, require the agency to represent the state's best interest in getting a fair return on the sale of state resources.
This is a contract, and it's a competitive bid sale. So when they sign the contract, there are contract stipulations like there isn't any contract that have to be followed.
Curran says forestry is being cautious because it's never dealt with biomass as a resource, so the agency is learning as it goes along in the process.
It very much is a learn as we go, because this was the first of its kind within the state, this first potential project and contract.
Curran says if the Tok Group agrees with the new contract he's working on, it's possible the agency will let it out for bid in early April. Stancliffe says he and the other biomass project backers will wait and see what forestry can come up with. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaskans who experience developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injuries, and mental health conditions are important members of the state's workforce. From healthcare facilities and nonprofit organizations to retail stores and restaurants, Alaska Mental Health Trust beneficiaries are succeeding in the workplace. The Trust encourages Alaska employers to consider ways in which trust beneficiaries and their unique skills can be good for business. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
Holding signs saying kids not cuts and vouchers hurt public schools. About 200 people packed the Alaska Capitol steps for a Save Our Schools rally yesterday afternoon. The crowd included parents, students, teachers, and community members, as well as a handful of state lawmakers. Juno Douglas High School senior Tori Talley talked about growing up in a low-income single-parent home before being adopted in the sixth grade. Through it all, she said, school was one of the few places she felt safe.
All the teachers knew exactly what my situation was, and they always would stop me in the middle of class, and they'd sit with me and talk to me if I needed it, and they were still there for me. So I've always had an extremely supportive, caring, and motivational support group.
Other speakers argued for an increase in state spending on education and against a proposed amendment to Alaska's constitution that would allow public funds to be spent on private and religious schools. Governor Sean Parnell and Republican lawmakers are pushing legislation that would put the issue to voters. With 2 months left in the legislative session, Anchorage Senator Berta Gardner, a Democrat, said opponents feel confident the amendment won't make it through, but
we have to keep the pressure up. We're ahead of the game. The public is absolutely with us, and we will not back down. Thank you.
Amendment supporters say it's needed to provide parents and students more school choice. Anchorage Democratic Representative Harriet Drummond and the Great Alaska Schools Coalition organized the rally. The Barnes Committee Room at the Alaska Capitol erupted in cheers this morning as a panel of lawmakers unanimously moved a bill that would make 20 Alaska Native languages official state languages. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, dozens of people testified in favor of the measure, House Bill 216.
UAS Professor Lance Twitchell greeted the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee in Tlingit. While English is the only official language of Alaska, Twitchell said this is not an English-only state.
For over 10,000 years, there have been other languages here, and they are still here today.
Twitchell is a native language specialist at the University of Alaska Southeast. He described a crisis point in the effort to save native languages. The average Alaska Native tongue has fewer than 1,000 speakers, the vast majority of whom are over the age of 70. The last fluent speakers of Eyak and Holokechuk Athabaskan died within the past decade. Twitchell said language loss is tied to a history of repression and discrimination against Alaska Natives.
I see dying languages and escalating suicide rates and think, how can those things not be connected? I see the end result of cultural genocide and think, how can we just decide to accept this? There is no magic solution for language loss, but there is the promise of unity in recognizing that solutions exist.
He said House Bill 216 is one of those solutions.
I sit here as your peer. I sit here as your equal. We may speak different languages, but mine is just as valuable, just as necessary, and just as useful as yours.
Bethel Elder Esther Green taught Yupik in the Lower Kuskokwim School District before she retired. Green said learning a language is a form of cultural preservation.
Language and culture go together, and they cannot be separated.
Savunga High School students Beverly Tooley and Chelsea Micklehook introduced themselves in Siberian Yupik. The language is no longer taught in their school, but the girls said they learned to speak it from their grandparents. Nome Democrat Neil Foster asked if they would be interested in taking native language classes.
If the classes were to be reintroduced into the school, are those classes that you would want to take?
Yes.
Great.
Barrow Democrat Ben Nagiak is the only member of the legislature who's a fluent speaker of a native language, Inupiaq. Fittingly, he made the motion to move HB 216 to the next committee.
I move House Bill 216 donated 28-LS0905/U from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
So moved. Bill passes from committee.
Prime sponsor, Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins, said he was moved by the support for the bill.
And this is a bill that very much felt as though it's of the people, belongs to the people who testify today, and belongs to people across Alaska who believe in the cultural importance of native languages.
Nobody testified against the legislation. Its next stop is the House State Affairs Committee. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, who believes that success isn't simply having an idea, it is knowing the right lender to help bring it to life. More at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Doy Unlimited, announcing the 2014 annual shareholder meeting on Friday, March 14th at the Westmark Hotel in Fairbanks. Information at doyon.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through PicClickGive or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.